Mike McEntee here on AM 950. Special treat today. If you want to go over to Facebook, you can watch us stream the show live. Yeah, we're in the studio, and you can see what I look like. And after that effect wears off, you can go back to listening on the radio. It has been exactly 1 month since the deadly shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And some are choosing a very somber way today to pay tribute to the 17 people killed in the massacre. Thousands of students and teachers began walking out of their classrooms this morning across the country as part of the Enough National School Walkout to raise awareness about issues of school safety and the impact of gun violence. The nationwide march, organized by Women's March Youth Empower, began at 10 o'clock local time, depending on where you were. And many marches lasted 17 minutes to represent each of the victims of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Now, here in the Twin Cities, students from more than about 50 schools were expected to participate. And from what we've been able to see on social media and what we're getting here in reports is that sounds like about what happened. And joining me right now is we're going to be talking to several students. We're going to be talking to students from St. Paul. We're going to be talking to a student here from Eden Prairie, Gabby Pittenger. Who also, besides being a student over at Eden Valley High School?
Eden Prairie.
I'm sorry. There we go. You can hate me for that too. Eden Prairie, besides being a student there, you also went to school in Parkland, Florida a few years ago, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I want to talk to you about that because this obviously what happened in Parkland was very personal for you when you found out about this a month ago, because you still know people down there, don't you?
Yeah, all my friends still go to the high school, and I know a few people in the middle school and my cousins in the elementary.
You left there about 2 years ago or so, didn't you?
Yes.
2.5, I think, is what you told me.
Mm-hmm.
And when this happened a month ago, how did you find out, and what did you feel when you heard all this?
So I was in my school's library when I found out. My mom texted me, and my heart sank. I had no words. I was upset. I was angry. I was sad. And I just got my laptop out and quickly looked up Twitter feeds and all so that I could see what my friends were texting and be like right up to date with all the information coming out. And I DM'd my friends direct messaged my friends on Instagram so their phones wouldn't go off while the shooting was happening. And I was just worried for everyone.
Wow. I mean, it's tragic that 17 people died. Did you know any of those 17?
I did not personally know any of the people who were killed, but my friends had one of them as a teacher, and my sister was at the same swim club as one of the boys who was killed, and my mom knew two of their parents.
But you knew a lot of the kids who were, and I say kids, you know, were young adults. You knew a lot of the young adults who were in the school, worried for their lives, wondering what was going on, just as you were. You've obviously communicated with them since then. What did they tell you about what was going on there?
So a lot of them feel sad and grief, and they're afraid to go to school. Some of them are happy that there's a police presence there now at the high school. Others are just reminded that this tragedy happened because there are police presented at the school every day. There are support dogs, and so that helps a little bit. But everyone's very shaken, and they feel guilty for having to step over dead bodies on their way out when they were escaping. They feel they're still kind of reliving the moments where they had to run from the school, or what my mom's friend's daughter had to hide in a closet for over 4 hours while they waited for the police to clear the building. Everyone's just very shaken, and it's going to take a long time for them to heal in their own way.
If you do, I mean, hopefully you heal, but I mean, there's something called PTSD, mm-hmm. post-traumatic stress disorder, and I hope nobody is suffering from that, but that things like that can show up much later. So this captured the attention of the entire nation, but it particularly captured your attention on a very, very personal level. Since that's happened, has anything changed for you in your life? And talk about what you ended up doing today and how you got there.
So I've always been a firm believer in the Second Amendment, but also controlling guns. I've always wanted gun control to be a thing. But after this happened, I was kind of thrust into reality that nothing has truly been done to keep us safe. And that if it can happen in Parkland, Florida, it can happen anywhere. Because I was in fifth grade when Sandy Hook happened. and I was at the elementary school, and my teacher told the class that we should not worry because it would never happen there, because Florida is such a safe, small town, and everything is good, and we had so many different situations that we would run through and just practice in case something happened. But it happened, and sadly, 17 lives were lost, and so it can happen anywhere. And so from there, I worked with three other girls from my school to organize the national-wide walkout. And so at 10 o'clock today, we walked out of class for 17 minutes. We held a rally. We led chants. We spoke, and we had a moment of silence for the 17 people.
Now, you got connected with this because you're part of the women's club at your school, correct?
Yes.
And that you got that connection because you were part of the Women's March. How did all that connect to this?
So last year I was part of the Women's March in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so I was following some of their things over social media, such as Instagram, and my mom followed them on Facebook. And so when the Women's March Empower organization came up with the idea, I was one of the first people to kind of hop aboard, and I really try to advocate for it in my school, and I had help from a few other classmates, and we, as students, we made it happen.
So how many students ended up walking out today?
I was told between 500 and 700, and so I'm going to go with six.
Okay, six in the middle there. That'll be yeah. The safe ground. And school was okay with this? Did they try to stop you?
So originally they were hesitant because as a school they can't encourage students to leave class. So, but we negotiated and we got a happy middle ground where they would allow it to happen, provide a police presence to keep everyone safe. And other than that, the teachers just wouldn't outright support it, and they would just allow the students to have this event.
Wow. And as we mentioned, this was not just at Eden Prairie. This was, and it wasn't just, it was all over the country. And there were other schools here in the Twin Cities that were participating. Central High School, we have two of the students who were part of that today. Avery Wellna and Zoe Chin are joining us now. Avery is a sophomore and Zoe Chin is a freshman. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Hey, let's start with you. You're a freshman there. This high school's a kind of a brand new experience for you. Why did you decide to get involved in this today?
So my mom has always been politically active, and after the election, I started to get more aware of the topics and things that were happening within the government and all political things. And when this shooting happened, it really, struck me, this is something that could happen anywhere and to anyone. And my school is very big, like the Major Stoneman Douglas. And I saw a lot of similarities into my school that was at, their school. And I decided that I wanted to make a change and that we could not let this happen again. Hmm. So I started it. I emailed Women's March right away, and I figured out what they were doing, and then I joined, along with Avery.
I say Gabby's shaking her head here. The story is very similar. Avery, tell me about why you got involved and your story on this.
My entire life, I've just been really politically active, or I've tried to be, and I've always wanted to do what's right, and. I'm part of some other groups at school that kind of work with things like this, but I reached out to Zoe a couple of days after what happened, and she was kind of the first person who had really kind of gotten on top of this, and then I talked to her about it and I kind of got into it, and it's something like this can happen anywhere, and we don't really think about it, but you know, it's it's there. And now that many of these things have happened, it's we have to step in and, do something and stop this from happening again, because,
So yeah. Avery, how did things go today? Everybody walked out 17 minutes and everybody went back in and that was it? Or was there more to it than that?
From actually being involved in it, it was definitely seemed like it was a lot more than just the 17 minutes. obviously it was 17 minutes, but it was just, it was like the amount of support we got from the students, it was just so significant, so important, and so many people walked out, and we had a lot of support from the administration on this one. And so all of that together was just incredible. And I mean, it was definitely like, it was just an incredible experience, and I'm so proud of everyone who chose to stand up today.
Did everybody go out, or were there people who decided not to go out?
I'm not really sure exactly, like, the amount of people who walked out today, but it was a lot of people.
Zoe, did you get any blowback from anybody, people saying, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that, this is not right, or... anybody who spoke, you know, on the other side of this to you saying that this is a bad idea?
Our administration, the second I went up there to talk to our principal, she was like, this is amazing. We're supporting this. We're going to make this a school activity. You can put posters around the school. You can put it on our little news within the school. So that was awesome that she let us do that. But we had people that I knew from middle school that were like, why are you doing that? It's, guns are awesome. They're fun to shoot. So that was kind of disappointing. I was more disappointed than angry at them because I thought that people would also realize that it means more that a life could be saved than that you have a gun to shoot for fun.
Gabby, did you have any blowback, people speaking on the other side at Eden Prairie?
So at my school, there were a bunch of people that just thought leaving class for 17 minutes and then going back would be pointless and meaningless, and that it's not what we need to do to get Congress to make change, or even some of them just didn't agree with change in general. And so when they would say that, I would just say, the more people that show up, the more press we're going to get, and the more chance our voices will be heard. And this is just a first step of many to make change happen.
Now, obviously, AM 950 here is paying attention to this, but you know, we're a very small part of the media. Were there cameras at Eden Prairie, or did media show up to cover this today?
The media tried, but we had a police presence to keep everyone safe and block the road at a certain point. So they weren't really able to film the event, but if they were close enough, they could hear the chants. I'm aware that Carol Levin, I think, tried to show up, and the Sun Tribune showed up, because I've been talking with the Sun Tribune, and my mom has a friend at Carol Levin who told her that they would be trying to come.
Avery, did at Central High School, were there cameras, media, or is it just the students and the police and the administrators out there in the parking lot?
Yeah, there was a camera. I'm not sure which news that belonged to, but there was also a helicopter that was flying over.
Okay. Well, that makes you feel secure. I guess anybody wants to tackle this one. The reason I was bringing up the media is this was obviously that the point here is to get people's attention. And this is what we've heard so much about this issue, is that people can't pay attention because we're going to move on to the next dumpster fire, whatever it be, in the national news, and this will be forgotten. How do we keep this moving forward? And I know there's some other marches and some other events coming up. Gabby, why don't we start with you on this one?
So my response to that is, I think school shootings is always going to be one of the focal points in the media, because not – a few days ago, someone was shot in Alabama and died in that school shooting, yet the media didn't really cover it. And
I didn't hear about it.
Yeah. And I heard about it over social media and saw her picture floating around. But school shootings happen all the time, and it's going to keep popping up until we get legislative change. And also, we are trying to get as many people as possible to attend the rally on March 24th at the Capitol. Whether that's in Minnesota or you're lucky enough to go to Washington, the Parkland students are trying to get as many people as possible to participate in that, to show Congress that we're angry and we demand change.
Zoe, what are you going to do? What happens after this for you?
Well, not only is there another march in March, but there's also one April 20th that is national-wide too. And I am going to do that along with I'm going to try to plan our school to walk out, and maybe we can try to get to the Capitol again like we did last week on March 7th. And I'm just going to keep working with Women's March and their End Gun Violence Committee.
For those of you missing the significance of the date, April 20th is the 19th anniversary of the Columbine High School shooting that happened longer ago than I think anybody, any of you here has been alive. And this is how long we have been dealing with these types of problems, which is pretty depressing for me to think about. This is where we are in our lives. This is where we are with our country. Are you hopeful that we can do something about this? Avery, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I think it's important for everyone to like remember and think about how basically we are our future, and you know, people really need to think about how far their advocacy is really going to go. I mean, are they just going to walk out once, or are they going to, you know, keep, like, standing up against our House of Representatives and our legislators and our senators until something changes? And that's what people need to keep doing.
Zoe, are the people you know likely to get more involved in politics? I mean, you're not old enough to vote, but you're old enough, I think, to take part in a campaign. Are you or any of your friends going to be doing that?
Yes. So we've already had a bunch of people come to me and our group that we have after this march that said, hey, what can I do to help or get more involved? So I've been giving suggestions to them, and we also set up a voter registration table today. And we had posters telling them how to do the online registration. And we had a bunch of people register that would be old enough this year on March 6th, or November 6th.
Okay. Gabby, we were talking about voting. You're obviously not old enough to vote, but you've got political plans here too, don't you?
Yes. At the moment, I'm just encouraging as many people to go to the protests. And I'm going to try and find a way to work with Dean Phillips and to gain him into office, because Eric Paulson kind of has taken too much money from the NRA, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, is a big gun organization. And so I plan to work really hard to make change happen. And that, for me, one of the steps is gain many more people that are on our side into office.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. And Avery, political action from you too, you thinking?
Oh, yeah. So what Zoe was talking about, there are a lot of people in our school who do want to get involved, and that's amazing. It's like we just need to keep, you know, like standing up against gun violence. And I think also, like, I don't know, just like basically just, yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all three of you for coming on the radio, because it's an unnatural thing to do, to go on the radio and talk to an old guy about what you did at high school today. But you've done a wonderful job here. I applaud what you're doing. I applaud that you're speaking up. I applaud that you're taking action, and you're going to be doing something beyond today, because this is symbolic, obviously, but it's political action that's actually going to change things. I think everybody here on the line with me understands that. Zoe Chin, Avery Wellna, and Gabby Pittenger, I thank you so much for joining me today. Best of luck, and keep fighting, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Folks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I got an update on a story I had for you yesterday. And then later on in the show, we've got an incredible story from Nancy Nelson. Would you give away an organ if you're still alive? Would you become an organ donor? Nancy Nelson wants to talk about it. That's all next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
Mashad Cooley Erickson, a mechanical and electrical consulting engineering firm in Minneapolis, supports inclusivity by designing spaces for all user groups, honoring inclusivity and respect. These spaces include gender-neutral family restrooms and nursing mothers' rooms. For example, Mashad Cooley Erickson has designed lactation rooms for traveling mothers at the MSP International Airport. Designing these spaces has changed the expectations of similar facilities in airports around the country. Mashad Cooley Erickson designed safe and comfortable environments for occupants, who are their number one priority. Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 on Monday mornings at 7:30. This Monday, I'll talk about Ame Dar, the founder of Idealist, a website that connects social-minded people with job opportunities. He's also pushing for various changes to make the world a better place. Stuff so dear to my heart. Tune in on Monday to hear more. I've got a vision of a better world where everyone has a place at the table. Ellie 2.0, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hello, I'm Dr. Vladimir von Surikov, the director and president of the Museum of Russian Art, which hosts the finest collection of Russian art in North America, as well as an award-winning gift shop, Izba. Unique gifts, artworks, and artisan-made products are sourced from artists and jewelers who use traditional Russian materials to create stunning pieces for purchase. Izba Gift Shop is on Facebook and Instagram. Our museum is at tmora.org. Visit Izba Gift Shop for that special gift you will cherish.
Spur your imagination at Stages Theatre Company with the steampunk dance-inspired musical, The Nightingale. You will be charmed by the reimagining of Hans Christian Andersen's classic fairy tale as a whirlwind of mayhem when a watchmaker's mechanical bird creates a frenzy in the Mayor's Festival of Progress. A delightfully contagious tune turns into a comical clatter as they yearn for the original Nightingale's songs of natural beauty. Enjoy the journey as the town learns to find balance between technological progress and the healing music of the real Nightingale. This world premiere musical is told through original music and is the sixth collaboration with Escalate Dance. It features ballet, tap, jazz, contemporary, and folk-centric dancing and choreography. The Nightingale runs March 9th to the 25th and will be loved by all ages. For ticket information, visit stagestheater.org.
Hey, it's Mike McEntee back here on AM 950. A couple of news notes I want to pass along, stories that we're all following. Obviously, there was a big election last night in Pennsylvania, and despite the Republicans having control of this district for many years and Donald Trump winning it by 20 points the last time around, Democrats eked out a victory. At least it looks like that. We may be in recount territory. They do not have an automatic recount in Pennsylvania, but this was a huge victory for Democrats. If you look at the maps that the New York Times was doing, massive amounts of people moved from being, you know, from voting on the not voting or voting for Republicans to voting for Democrats. And that's a huge thing. It just indicates where we are with this wave election. And remember, the Republicans here have suffered two big defeats in places that usually vote Republican a lot. The first was in Alabama, where Roy Moore lost a special election in December. And you can easily just kind of wave that one away because, you know, the guy was accused of sexually accosting underage girls. Moore was one of the most politically damaged major party candidates in modern political history. But you can't walk away or wipe away last night. Rick Saccone, the Republican candidate for the 18th Congressional District, was a state legislator and a veteran running a district that backed Trump by 20 points nearly 17 months ago. And Saccone appears to have lost only by a few hundred votes, but he lost. And he didn't run a race as he would have. He was beaten on fundraising. He was outperformed on messaging. As a candidate, he was middle of the road, but hardly in Roy Moore territory. So a narrow win for him would have been bad news for Republicans nationally, but a loss is really bad news. Now, one other piece of politics I want to pass along here as well. Yesterday, I mentioned there's a bill that was introduced in the Minnesota House that would outlaw ranked choice voting. It would repeal it in Minneapolis and St. Paul, where we have it already. And I think Duluth, if we don't have it, it's almost there. But we have several cities in Minnesota that are doing this already. And this bill would repeal it. Now, yesterday we talked about that Representative Rena Moran had originally signed on to this bill. She's taken her name off of it. She is not supporting this legislation, says her legislative assistant. I don't know the story behind it, but she is out of that. So there are three Republicans and one DFL are supporting that. There was another bill introduced almost identical today in the Minnesota Senate. I want to give you the senators' names in case you belong to one of their you're one of their constituents and you want to tell them something different. Senators Mark Coran, John Jasinski, and David Senjum are all Republicans. And then John Hoffman, who is the DFLer, I believe he's in St. Paul. have introduced this bill. Again, it would strip the rights of local control, and cities would no longer be able to do ranked choice voting. This is right up there with telling cities that they cannot have sick time, safe and sick time. They cannot raise the minimum wage. And if it does not have bipartisan support, I guess the good news is Governor Mark Dayton has said if it does not have broad support when he's talking about changes in election laws, he's not going to sign it. So he may have to play hockey goalie on this if it gets to his desk, because remember, the Republicans control the House and the Senate in Minnesota. But we'll have to see. We're going to keep an eye on this one as it makes its way through the House and Senate. We'll let you know if there's any hearings, and of course, we'll be live streaming them over at The Uptake. All right, folks, we're going to take another break, but when we come back, this amazing story I'm going to spend the rest of the show talking about with Nancy Nelson. It's about making what for me would be a very, very difficult decision, but for Nancy, apparently, it was very, very easy. We're going to talk about it. How you can become an organ donor when you are still alive and save someone's life. That's all next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
I've been waiting for this moment all my life.
Northeast Minneapolis is known for its creativity, and you'll know exactly why when you eat at Hazel's Northeast. Their creatively prepared comfort food will have you coming back week after week. Breakfasts like biscuits and gravy, granola pancakes, and brisket hash. For lunch, homemade soup and one of the best Reubens in town. And don't miss the daily risotto or Chef Ali's ever-changing dinner specials. Come on in, bring the whole family. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Auto Technical's fundraising vehicle sale. Our three mechanics have been busy getting cars and trucks ready for the Friday-Saturday fundraiser sale. Come take a test drive. Take it to your mechanic. You will be impressed by the quality and pricing. $1,500 to $4,000 Friday and Saturday. A good bet is Auto Tech. AutoTech.org. 651-646-7826. 651-646-7826.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. What if you could be a lifesaver? What if you could save someone's life? Would you? We all have that opportunity. The question is, will you take that step? Nancy Nelson joins us today because she's taken that step. Hi, Nancy. How you doing?
Hello, my friend. Thank you very much for letting us be here. And every single day, thank you for your voice and what you do and what you stand for. It matters so much that these airwaves stay open here at AM 950.
I know so many of our listeners are so happy to hear your voice every time you come back on because they miss you, Nancy.
Well, I miss them. Thanks very much for letting us come back.
We're glad to have you here. Let's turn to what we're talking about today. You told me this story a couple weeks ago, and I was just floored. You told me that you had given up your kidney to somebody else to save their life. And I was going, a relative? And you said, no, this was a friend. Tell me about how this all happened.
You know, Mike, I'm a little uncomfortable with it sounding like a big deal because the truth of the matter is it is not a big deal.
Well, to me, it's a big deal. So you can go ahead. It's not a big deal to you.
And I'm not sure that I saved Ellen's life, but okay. I certainly helped her burden with her health issue a little bit. I have known Ellen DePhillips and her wife, Stacy Pangborn, since just after my husband passed away. Ironically, the priest who married us said, I was in agony. I couldn't even breathe. And he said, I know somebody I think you should meet just because they're wonderful people. We met shortly after Billy passed away, and we've been joined at the hip ever since. And yes,
Ellen is with us here, by the way, folks. Ellen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate being here today.
And Ellen, it was last January that we had lunch together, Ellen and Stacy and I, and Ellen said, I knew she had had health issues over the years, but no big deal. And she said, gee, I just was at the doctor today, and I'm stunned. I didn't even know I had kidney trouble, and I'm in stage 3 renal failure, and I'm going to have to go on dialysis, and I'm going to need a transplant. And I don't really have any relatives that are even still living or of an age where it would be possible, so chances are I won't get a transplant. And Mike, it wasn't even to think about it. It was, well, let me test, because it's not a big deal to do it, but you can make such a difference. It's such a gift to be able to do it, I can't tell you.
Because, Ellen, what were you facing? If this so many people end up on a waiting list for a very long time, what would that have been like, do you know?
Well, the waiting list, from what I understand, is anywhere from 3 to 5, 6, 7 years for a kidney transplant. The next step would be dialysis. As your kidneys, the kidney function decreases, you would end up on dialysis as you go through stage 4, stage 5, which is complete renal failure.
And dialysis is usually 3 times a week, several hours
yes.
a day.
So this totally changes your life when this happens.
Exactly.
And the quality of your life, I don't know what it's like under those circumstances.
You know, thank goodness I don't have to find out about dialysis, because it's very, very hard on your other organs. So to be placed on dialysis that often, 3 times a week or 4 times a week, depending on which treatment you choose to pursue, your organs will shut down quicker, your body will just shut down quicker, you become more depressed.
You might not get to die of old age.
And you might
not get to die of
so
old age.
So to wait for a kidney is really a traumatic event in your life.
Mike, the numbers are extraordinary. Kidney disease is the 9th largest killer in the United States of America. It kills more people than prostate cancer, than breast cancer. 30 million people today in America have some stage of kidney disease. 90% of them do not know they have it. 1 in 5 who have high blood pressure either has kidney disease or will develop it. 1 in 3 with diabetes either has kidney disease or will develop it. There are 100,000 people at this minute on a waiting list to get a kidney. Of that 19,000 this year, of that 100,000 this year, only 19,000 will get a kidney. And of the 19,000 who get one, only 6,500 will get a kidney from a living donor. The other from cadaver donors, people who put yes on their driver's license. But there's two prongs here. Be a donor. Oh, please be a donor. And please be sure you're okay or your family member is. With those stats, we all are living next to people every single day who have kidney disease and don't even know it. And by the time they know it, it can be so critical that it's all over. Ellen was in stage 3 and never even knew it. And you felt great.
Felt wonderful. Didn't have any symptoms. I was diabetic most of my adult life, and never took the time or even realized that I should research the long-term complications of diabetes. I mean, I knew the blindness, the amputation, you know, the possibility of those issues creeping up on you, organ failure, but didn't really connect kidney disease with the diabetes. So for me at stage 3 to start thinking about this and thinking, now what? How am I going to start changing my lifestyle to have this debilitating disease not take a dive quickly, so I can prepare myself for either trying to find a donor, getting on a list, or whatever? So the education end of it at an early stage is so important. And don't hesitate to just go online and read about kidney disease.
Ask your doctor for a blood test, yes? Yeah. I mean, can you imagine you're in stage 3 renal failure and they say you're probably going to have a transplant and you go, really, I didn't know I had kidney disease. Yeah. I mean.
Now, so much when we talk about doing donations, it's, you know, after you die, you know, after, you know, because.
You can do that. And do it.
Because most of our organs, we need them while we're still functioning. Mm-hmm. But with a kidney, you've got two kidneys, obviously, and, you know, you can give somebody one. You both look very healthy.
Thank you.
Everybody here is doing rather well. But when you and that has to bring you some immense amount of joy, knowing that you're partially responsible for that, Nancy.
That's what I mean when I say, Mike, whatever we talk about being a living donor, and people say, oh, what a great gift. The gift is really to me, mm-hmm. to have the privilege of making the slightest difference with so little effort. Yes, there's surgery. Yes, you're scared. Yes, there's pain. They give you medication. Yes, you're tired for a while. You sleep, you rest. And today, we had the surgery on November 2nd. Today, I would not even know I had ever had surgery.
And you told me you didn't hesitate when you heard this. I mean, did you know what you were going to go through when you said yes?
Well, I was very aware of kidney transplantation because, ironically, it's funny how life can come full circle. My husband and I moved in across the street from a little girl in 1972 when we had our first home who had kidney failure, and she was one of Dr. John Najarian's first patients at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
And we got involved with the Kidney Foundation because there was this drive to get people to donate an organ. Nobody had ever heard of it before. It was controversial. Religious organizations didn't like it. It was unbelievable what that was like. But we became very good friends with John Najarian. And here I am all these decades later, and I had the opportunity. And when Ellen said, I need a transplant, you don't think about it. Sure, let me do that.
Well, let me ask you the obvious question that came to my mind, because, you know, I go, okay, I've got two kidneys, I'll give you one, but what if mine fails? Are you worried about that you're more subject to having disease or having problems because you've done this? Is that entered
into
your mind?
They talked to both of us about this a great deal, didn't they, Ellen? And certainly there is that possibility. But one of the reasons you go through such an extensive battery of tests mm-hmm. is that you can only do this if you're in really good health. And they looked at my kidney function at my age, because your kidneys do get less functional as you get older. And with my kidney function level at my age, it was acceptable. And I said, oh, you mean that as it declines, it's not going to decline any more rapidly than it has in all of these decades of my life, so I'll be dead before my kidney's gone. And they said, yeah, essentially, but we wouldn't put it that way.
Well, you're good at putting it. You get right to the
very
point.
Very good explanation.
Yeah, yeah, but that really is it, isn't it? It's it's quite extraordinary, Mike. It really is.
I tell you what we're going to do. I know we have another person we want to bring into the conversation on this. What I'm going to do is we're going to take a break right now. And then when we come back, I want to bring Lois Travellina, who was part of this.
Yeah.
She was part of the caretaking part of this. We're going to talk about that. We got way more to talk about on this topic. You're listening to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950.
Common Roots Cafe is the perfect spot for the whole family to get delicious, local, and organic food. They have a great kids' menu equipped with games and coloring, while parents can enjoy a great local beer, wine, or specialty cocktail. It's never been a fad or a marketing ploy to make everything from scratch with local and organic ingredients. It's always been an unwavering commitment. If they can buy it local and organic, or get it from their on-site garden, they will. Common Roots is located off 26th and Lindale and online at commonrootscafe.com.
Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens is the first green cemetery in Minnesota. It's a beautiful, peaceful place where burials are celebrations of life with as little impact on the environment as possible. Tony Weber founded it because he wants to leave a green legacy for his grandchildren, something many of us might feel. Learn more. Visit the website mngreengraves.com. Give them a call. The goal is so meaningful, so positive, it might be right for you. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. We're talking about kidney transplants. Are you somebody who is waiting for a transplant or somebody who is thinking about donating a kidney? Because you can do it while you're alive. You don't have to wait until you're gone. You can see the benefit that it gives. Give us a call if you want to talk about it. We're talking about that. It's 952-946-6205. We're talking with Nancy Nelson and Ellen DePhillips. Nancy gave her kidney to Ellen. And I want to bring in somebody else here in just a moment, but I asked a question before when we went to break, which was, do you have to have a test for this? Do you have to match? Because we talk about that, oh, you have to be a relative, or you have to be, you know, when you're having a heart transplant. You did have to have some sort of test for this, right?
When I told Ellen I'd like to do it, she said, well, here's the numbers at Mayo Clinic, and you can call. And I called, and the first thing they did was have me do a blood workup. I did it here. It was sent down there. And I needed two matches. I needed a blood type match. My blood type matched. And then the antigens, is that it? Yeah, antigens. And then that was a match, and we could go forward. A very cute and quick story.
Sure.
Because Ellen and Stacy are, well, how could I give a kidney to somebody who's not a liberal? But I would have. But
that doesn't matter in the blood type, right?
But we were down there waiting, and then we got the approval. And what was it a friend of yours said on the phone about, I'm glad you're getting a kidney?
Oh, your left kidney. Nancy donated her left kidney. It's placed on my right side, so...
But I think your friend said, oh, I'm so glad you're getting a kidney from a Democrat.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that obviously
that
a joke.
That was a follow-up, yeah.
What was your reaction when you heard that things matched and this was going to be able to happen?
Well, it's a beautiful story. I was sitting after 4 days of assessment that Nancy had to go through down at Mayo.
Ellen went with me. She was there for all the tests.
And Nancy came out, and as Nancy does, she had tears running down her eyes, and I didn't quite know whether that was a good thing or a negative thing, but she looked at me and she said, I'm a match. We're a go. And I've said this, you know, before. I stood up, mm-hmm. and I took a step back and said to myself, this is the most amazing thing that could ever happen to me. And my second thought was, how can I do this to my beautiful friend? How can I put her in jeopardy of not having two kidneys? Or what if something happened?
Yeah.
But can you believe that was her thought? As great as her need was, that was her thought.
You folks are great friends, obviously.
Yes.
This is, I'm sure, made
Mike,
it grow even deeper.
But
so.
Mike, if I understood then what I understand now with the great need, I would simply have gone forward and said, I'd like to be tested. You can call Mayo, you can call the U of M,
Without
you can call the kidney organization, and they will test you, and they will match you to somebody on the other side of the country that you'll never see or never know, and you can give them your kidney. And why wouldn't you?
One of the wonderful things about that is they have what they call a shared kidney donation, or sharing
yes.
program.
Yeah, I would have done that if I hadn't been a blood match.
What's the sharing donation?
If Nancy hadn't been a match for me, mm-hmm. she would have had the opportunity to sign up and say, I will give you my kidney or give someone my kidney if you have someone out there in this organization that's a match and will give my friend their kidney.
It's essentially pay it forward.
Pay it forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I want to bring somebody else in here, Lois Travellina, there we go, who was involved in this whole this whole incident. She was a very essential part of this.
Oh, Lois, your dogs are barking.
We can hear Lois in the background. Hello, Lois. Welcome to the program.
The dogs have to be here.
Lois is from California, a lifelong friend. Her husband, well-known in Vegas in the Johnny Carson show. I lived with Fred and Lois for a long time when I was anchoring news in L.A., and when she heard we were going to do this and that I would need some help after the surgery, Ellen had Stacy with her. I'm alone now without Billy. Lois, without blinking an eye, said, I'm flying in. I'm taking care of you. And boy, did you, like a cop, Lois.
Lois. Well, that's very nice to hear. I was worried about, she's so anal in so many ways that she wants to do everything herself. And I'm there lifting the dogs, going to the grocery shop, driving the car. And I say, so how you doing? Fine. What do you mean you're fine? You just had an operation. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. She was fine. Mentally and physically, this woman went through it like you're just sitting down to have a cup of tea. I was amazed at the whole scenario, what happened. I was there a month and watching her. She didn't go up and down stairs, and she didn't lift things, and that's good. But when asked, how do you feel? Well, I'm a little tired. Well, of course you are. So I was just honored to be a part of it.
She made it possible for us, Ellen.
She did.
You made it possible for us because I needed somebody with me. And in my circumstance without Billy, I didn't have somebody with me.
The fact that I love Ellen also, because we're all good friends, and to understand that she's got a life still ahead of her. So does Nancy and I. I mean, we're the same age. But
aren't you much older than me? Are you sure you're not much older than me? I thought you were.
I was much younger.
Oh, golly.
Well, we're going to compare driver's license after we get through the show.
Right.
Lois, were you surprised by her decision?
For older people to have to go through this, I mean, this is a scenario you do not hear very often. And so this woman, in my eyes, is an angel that enabled somebody to continue living for many years to come. And it's sad that there aren't more people like this, but we don't understand it. When I hear about all of this and I say, well, maybe I could give my kidney someday, unfortunately, I'm not able to do that because I had something many years ago and they said, don't ever think about giving blood or an organ again. Oops. But that's my scenario. What happened to them to be together, and we all are going to stay friends till death do us part.
Which we hope is a long, long time.
And more people need to know it. They need to hear this. Because you're not going to get paid to do it. That's not what you're doing it for.
You're doing it for love, Lois? You're doing it for love. Mike, what?
Lois, were you surprised when Nancy came to you and said, this is what I'm going to do? Was this just totally out of the blue?
Oh, yeah, out of the blue. She calls me up and says, I made a decision I'm going to do, but I want to find out, can you come out here for a month and stay with me? What? Of course. What? When? Let's do it. You know, it was fine with me. Yes, I was shocked that she said she would, because I didn't know anything about people going through such a thing.
But now you do, and I know you agree. It's just a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Yes. There was a gentleman, a family of a gentleman in the waiting room while the girls were in operation, and he was also in operation. And the family and I spoke, and they told me how he had been wanting to get a kidney for almost 11 years.
Wow.
And the last few years was on dialysis from Michigan. And he was told to come to Mayo. He was going to get this kidney. And he got there, and, oh, my God, the gentleman who was going to donate the kidney didn't show up.
Oh.
From Florida. Well, they were all distressed and thought this wasn't going to work. Oh, my gosh, we have to wait longer. Oh, no. The kidney was flown up from Florida.
They did not realize that the man had gone
into surgery locally.
Yeah, in Florida. They took the man's kidney out and they flew it up to Mayo Clinic. And this man got a kidney from a man in Florida they never met. They never knew each other. And the man in Florida said, I've got a healthy kidney. Maybe I can help somebody out.
Do kidney patients, kidney transplant patients, is there some sort of Facebook group or do people talk to each other?
Well, you've been going to some meetings
Ellen. Been involved with the National Kidney Association. This March is National Kidney Month. There's a group in Minnesota here, right in the Twin Cities, just put on a summit a couple of weeks ago.
Is there an email? Is there a website or something?
You know, I would go right to Minnesota
kidneyassociation.org.
There's a really good support group from what I understand because I'm so new to this, I'm just joining that. So I'll be attending those support groups, and it's a much-needed thing. You need to be able to talk about how you're feeling and what's going on with your life, and if you can support other people in the support group, more power to you. It's wonderful. One of the things that I wanted to say about Lois, as a caretaker, people don't realize what it takes to be a caretaker, whether you're the giver or you're the taker. Lois and both Lois and my wife could not have stepped up to the plate.
Couldn't have done it without them. It wouldn't have been possible.
It wouldn't. They were angels.
We love
angels.
You, Lois. Thank you. We love you, Stacy.
You bet, Lois.
Mike, thank you so much for letting us talk about this. Be sure you ask your doctor to check you. You may be one of the 30 million Americans, 90% who don't even know they have kidney disease. And think about being a donor. It's a remarkable gift to yourself.
Lois, Ellen, Nancy, thank you so much for coming on and telling about this fantastic story. Hopefully it's going to inspire other people to maybe move that meter just a little bit and help somebody else that they know or they don't know, because that's really great.
Thank you for letting us share it, Mike.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much
for coming in.
Bye, Lois.
Bye, Lois.
Bye,
y'all.
Hey, I got to talk about one thing here before we go away. And Norman Goldman, by the way, coming up here in just a few minutes after the news. But tonight is the State of the State address. Governor Mark Dayton, this is his final address. Last time, if you remember, it was interrupted because he fell over. He's doing much better. They've figured out what was wrong with him. He's been treated for that. But he will be giving his final State of the State address starting tonight at 7 o'clock. And we'll be live streaming it over at theuptake.org. So head over to The Uptake. You can watch it there. You can watch it on Facebook. You can watch it, I believe we'll put it on AM950's Facebook page tonight, too. So you can watch it anywhere. And remember, support The Uptake, because we make this kind of stuff happen so you can see it. We'll be back here tomorrow. Thanks for listening.